You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the fabulous Feinstein's 54 Below. Before we get started this evening, just a polite reminder. Please take this moment to silence your cell phones. Also, there is no flash photography, please. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Helen Park!
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Feinstein's 54 Below podcast, where we bring you behind the scenes at Broadway's Supper Club. I'm Nella Vera, the club's director of marketing. This week, we continue to shine the spotlight on new musical composers and lyricists with a series called New Writers at 54. So far, we've had the pleasure of interviewing four of the five wonderful artists participating in this series, and I'm thrilled to have our fifth writer with us today. Our guest today is Helen Park, theatrical and film composer. Helen's recent work includes K-Pop, her off-Broadway musical debut, for which she co-wrote music and lyrics. Produced by Ars Nova, Mayi Theatre Company, and Woodshed Collective, the critically acclaimed show received a sold-out extended run in New York City and was awarded the 2018 Richard Rogers Award and the Lucille Ortel Award for Best Musical. Helen also composed music for Baked Goods, for which she won the 2018 Samuel French Short Playwriting Contest. She is currently writing songs for a new animated feature musical film called Over the Moon, directed by the legendary Academy Award winner Glenn Keane and produced by Pearl Studios and Netflix. The film is slated for a 2020 global release. She is the first Asian composer or lyricist to win a Lucille Ortel Award and is a three-time Drama Desk nominee. Helen, welcome to the Feinstein's 54 Below podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Can you start out by telling us a little bit about your journey to become a composer? How does a young person start composing?
I was born in Korea, and I started playing the piano at around age 5. And I started playing, and my mom had this dream for me to become a concert pianist. So she had me practice for hours a day, and at first, I thought I enjoyed it. I love the expression of emotions through music. But I think at some point, I enjoyed more discovering new music. For instance, if I'm working on a Beethoven sonata music, I would play this one number, and then I would just go on to the next number to see what that music is like, and I started sight reading that. And I would go on to the next one and the next one, and I would just kind of explore new music like that, and I enjoyed that more than, you know, perfecting a detail in one number for hours and hours. And so my mom quickly realized that, I mean, not really quickly, because up until like sixth grade she had that hope for me to become a pianist. She realized that I don't have the persistence and what it takes to become a concert pianist. And so in sixth grade I was actually preparing for auditioning for this professional, like, music-focused, specialized school in Korea. It was a middle school. And I was practicing to audition for that, but there also came an opportunity for me to participate in this summer camp that was held in Virginia, and they were focusing on musical theater. I was in Korea at that time, but I had lived in the States before, in Missouri, for 2 years prior to that. And so I asked my mom if I can go to that summer camp instead of practicing in Korea to go to that middle school. So my mom reluctantly said yes because she knew that I just did not want to become a concert pianist. And so I went to the U.S. I went to Virginia, and I went to the musical theater program, and we did a production of Once Upon a Mattress.
Oh, wow.
And I was the minstrel because there was no other role for me to do. But I enjoyed it so much. It was such a life-changing experience. I loved how these melodies that are sung are just so expressive and so freeing compared to classical music. And they had stories to tell. Every character had a story to tell. And it wasn't just stories, but it was emotions. And I just loved that. And so I fell in love with musical theater then. After that, I started listening to so many other types of music other than classical music. I was exposed to K-pop music for the first time. And, you know, that was another life-changing moment. And I listened to a lot of pop, R&B. I think that really, like, broadened my view of music. And I was able to take in all of these different kinds of music after giving up that dream of being a classical pianist.
Wow. Were you exposed to musical theater in Korea as well, or was that camp the first time?
I think the camp was the first time I was actually exposed to, like, actual Broadway music. Before then, I was familiar with, you know, Disney movies. And, of course, I related to Ariel so much because I always felt like I'm the most, you know, I always thought I was, like, a little bit different than other fellow Koreans, but also other Americans when I lived in the States. I always felt like I was a little odd because I'm, like, way too expressive. And but I was familiar with Disney music, but I wasn't really familiar with Broadway.
Oh, wow.
And I sang at church musicals.
Yeah.
And those were, like, Korean-made, those very small, like, church musicals. And I loved that.
Was your mom a musician? Is that why she had this dream for you? And is the rest of your family musical?
Well, my dad is sort of a singer. He loves singing, but it's a hobby for him. And my mom, she's not a musician, but she loves she enjoys music, and I think she dreamed of playing piano herself, and so she wanted me to become a pianist and kind of achieve her dream that she never got to even try. Yeah, but they're both health professionals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about K-pop, which, by the way, I'm obsessed with. You co-wrote music and lyrics for it. It was the most nominated off-Broadway show of the 2017-2018 season. What first interested you in K-pop as a genre? Were you a big fan of boy bands or of K-pop music?
You know, I think to me, K-pop was my first exposure to pop music. For a lot of people, like Michael Jackson is their first pop music exposure. But for me, you know, it was Rula, this girl and boy combined, a mixed band that was really popular when I was in elementary school. And I remember that first time I bought a cassette tape, and that was of the fourth album of Rula. And I just fell in love with how exciting and entertaining these music was. And I started to become more and more interested in that genre. Of course, at that time I was in Korea, so that was pop for me. It wasn't K-pop, it was just pop.
Right.
And after that, the biggest K-pop moment for me, or the K-pop fangirling moment for me, was for H.O.T., this five-member boy band that was super, super popular when I was in sixth grade. That was a moment when I was just in love with the band members. I remember when they were doing the closing performance of their first album. I was watching that performance in the TV, and I started crying because I was so sad that I won't be able to see them for, I don't know, like a couple months. And I just was so sad that, like, you know, I felt such connection to this boy band that I was so, like, I was sobbing when they finished their first album Activities. So
do you think Americans understand that phenomenon? I know we've had in America a few boy bands that people get crazy over, you know, the Backstreet Boys or NSYNC, but the K-pop genre in itself in Korea and in Asia, and it's spreading, is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
you know, I don't think Americans quite understand that phenomenon. And also, yeah. Why do you think there's so much emotion and so much in the culture
yeah.
that you get attached to these bands in such a way?
Yeah, I think growing up, we didn't have internet back then, but I still think there were a lot of opportunities for the bands to actually connect with fans. And there were a lot of, you know, merchandise, and in talk shows they would be, you know, talking about themselves as people. And so I think fans love that connection. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that's different than American pop, because American pop, there's always this mystery. You don't get like such close connections with the bands. And now with the use of social media and internet, I think people are more feeling like they have such strong connections with the artists mm-hmm. because there's, you know, Instagram Live, there's a lot of these like fan meetings, there are these so many different ways to connect with fans. So I think that is something that's so different than American pop.
Got it. How was the experience of creating that show? Like, who thought up that this should be a show, and how did you become involved in the process?
Well, so I think Teddy Bergman, our director, and Jason Kim, our writer, I think they both kind of had the idea to develop a K-pop themed musical sort of at the same time. And then Ars Nova, who knew both of them, they thought that it would be great for them to meet and think of an idea to mm-hmm. how to use the K-pop genre into a musical. And so they started with that idea. And I think after that, they wanted to see what kind of songwriters are out there to make this into a musical. They started hunting for songwriters, and that's when I became involved, and that was in 2014. Back then, my collaborator, Max Vernon, he already knew that I wrote K-pop music before, and he already heard, you know, some of my work from before, and so he recommended me and got me on board.
I want to say that the show reminded me a lot of a show that I saw downtown called Here Lies Love, in the structure, because, and I was reading the New York Times review for K-pop, and it said, it's a sweaty celebration of perky young talent and a cold-eyed look at an industry that eats its stars for breakfast. It's a feel-good romp and a bad-feel psychodrama. But it also said that it was wildly entertaining, and I found when I saw it that it was super entertaining and fun, but it was also very unnerving at the same time, which is why it reminded me of Here Lies Love, which was kind of the same thing. You went in and you were in this world, and there was Ruthie Ann Miles, and you were like, she's awesome. And then as the show went on, you realized, oh, the Marcos regime was not so great. And you had that moment as an audience member where you were kind of horrified at how much of a good time you were having, but it was still a great night of theater. And I think that your show, I felt the same thing with it, these two parts to it in a way. And how did you guys balance between those two things? Hmm. And was that intentional or?
Yeah. First of all, I would love to see Here Lies Love. I heard so many great things about it, and I'm so sad that I missed it. But yeah, I think for us, it wasn't a question of how much of the entertaining aspect or how much of the, you know, more serious aspect are we going to portray and how. Like, that was not the real question. I think the question was, how do we accurately portray these human beings? I think a lot of the times in media, Asians have been portrayed as very one-dimensional, and I think it's been kind of the tendency in the industry to generalize Asians, and I think that's why there's so many, you know, stereotypes, and there's so many wrong impressions of people who are actually more diverse than, you know, Americans. You know, there's more population in China, for example, than, you know, white Americans. And I think that's something that we wanted to tackle, and we wanted to represent right. Even in, you know, within this label, within this K-pop label, every human being in this label are different, and they're going through different things. How do we tell their, you know, each of their story? I think that's what what made it, you know, specific and at the same time, it, you know, complex. Oh, like, it's universal. It's like, oh, there's, you know, a really fun and funny and entertaining side of this person, but there is also something, you know, they're not entirely happy. There's something that they're going through. And what is that? And, like, how, what do we see? Do we see ourselves in that person too? And I think the answer is yes. Like, I think everybody sees something in at least one of these characters about themselves. And I think that's what we are hoping for in our next iteration as well.
Yeah. No, it was fascinating. And it's also a very young person's genre, right? I think you kind of start to age out in your mid to late 20s out of this genre of being able to be a K-pop star.
Mm-hmm.
So it focuses on very young people.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to me that young people who are still developing and finding themselves, and these performers are put into, you know, under such a spotlight and have all this pressure on them and need to perform and need to be sort of in touch with their public and have a certain image that they portray, but they're still very young people mm-hmm. who are finding themselves. I don't think that at age 20 I knew anything about the world. And you read all these stories about how many of them are having problems or have breakdowns or other mental health issues. And it's not surprising because of that, because, you know, they start to age out. I remember when I was very young, we had a boy band in South America, Menudo, and they aged out at 15, 16. Oh, so once you turned 16, you couldn't be in the band anymore. And Ricky uh-huh. Martin was in that band, which is why I'm obsessed with Ricky uh-huh. Martin now, because I was a teenager, you know, in the Menudo fan club. But at 16, you're, you know, washed up. That's it. You're done. And I was thinking about that when I was watching this show. It's the same thing. Because I remember when Ashley Park came on with her character and yeah. how she's trying to hang on to her youth and her youthful fans. And that was her arc, was that she was aging out
yeah.
of this.
And she's only, I mean, her character was only 27 years old. And she was like, I'm done. I'm too old for this.
Yeah.
Which is mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really wonderful. I want to ask about the casting, because the cast was so fantastic and spot on, and they were doing everything. They were doing the music and the dancing. How did you find this cast? And did some of them come from the music world, or were they all theater performers who were just really good and could mimic, you know, this genre?
They were from everywhere. I mean, the casting process was actually pretty difficult because there weren't that many opportunities for Asians up to this point. And so in order for us to find believable K-pop stars, we also needed to search outside of the box. And of course, you know, Ashley Park was already a fabulous actress that's been in other Broadway shows. And Jason Tam, like, he was also a Broadway,
he was, you know, such veteran. A star.
He's such a great, yeah, he's a great performer.
Yeah.
But then there were also others like Jiho Kang, who basically we found him on YouTube.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, we heard about him through somebody who saw him on YouTube, and we watched his video, and we found out that he was actually a Harvard graduate, and he was actually working for the government. But we, you know, reached out to him anyway and was asking if do you want to be in our show. And so he quit his job and he flew here, and he crushed it. He was such a great
addition
to our show. Yeah, so it's like a, you know, variety of people that comprise our cast, and
right.
they were all so amazing.
Yeah, they were. I just was impressed with the dancing that they, you know, they could do these steps, and that they could do them as though they had been doing them for a very long time as one band. It was really pretty amazing and wonderful. So let me ask you, what's next for K-pop?
So we are redeveloping the show, and now we are trying to bring it to Broadway. And of course, that's a totally different structure, because it's no longer a three-story, mm-hmm. you know, building and an immersive experience. But we're still hoping to retain that immersive feeling, to really include the audience in immersing the audience in the music and, yeah. you know, the whole experience. So even if you're just sitting and watching, you would still feel like this is somewhat an immersive
yeah.
setting and immersive theater. So, yeah.
I think that's possible. I mean, within the limits mm-hmm. of Broadway, you know, some shows are doing it, like Moulin Rouge comes mm-hmm. right out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Rocky did it when they sent that big boxing ring into the middle of the orchestra. Mm-hmm. Do you feel mm-hmm. like you're part of it?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I think the heart of the show was what really touched a lot of people. And I think people wanted, you know, more mm-hmm. of the characters and just yeah. learning about their journey and what's going on in their in their emotional journeys. And so I think it's actually great for people to just sit and watch.
Yeah.
And
enjoy. But some people don't want to.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
be immersed.
Yeah, or like just walking in, you know, I mean, it was great to have the spectacular elements and looking around and seeing so many cool things, but I think that was not our essence of the show. I don't think mm-hmm. that was like
yes.
the focal point of our show.
You were talking about the human stories.
Yeah.
And it was nice to have all the great, fun stuff, but in the heart, it was a human story, like you said, yeah.
Yeah.
You. So you recently, you've been working on Over the Moon. Mm-hmm. Which is a Netflix animated children's musical slated for release later in this year. Can you tell us a little bit about that project and how you became involved with it?
It's more of a family musical adventure film, I would say, because it's a little bit, you know, deeper than, I would say, a children's musical. But, yeah, I got the opportunity to be one of the songwriters for the film Over the Moon after one of the people at Pearl Studios came to see K-pop, and they really love the music. So, yeah, I was very fortunate to hop on that team of wonderful people. And, yeah, it's co-written with Chris Curtis and Margie Duffield, and we're actually done writing those songs now.
Oh, you
for
are?
The film,
good.
And they're okay. just animating. You know, that's how animation works, apparently.
Oh, really?
Animation songs already get written first, and then they perform it, and then they animate to, you know, the voices so that it syncs right up.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
that's incredible.
Yeah. So I'm just waiting for it to be done animating and to see it soon.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I also love Chris Curtis. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with Chaplin. I loved mm-hmm. that show so mm-hmm. much. So I was so excited to see his name when
yeah,
I was doing research
yeah.
for this.
He and
yeah.
I had a really great collaboration. yeah. He and I did the music, and then Margie Duffield did the lyrics.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, Chris and I worked really closely on the music, and it's like a really great fusion of our strengths, and I had mm-hmm. such a fun time
oh,
writing
good.
That show. Yeah.
And it's the director is a legend in Hollywood, and, you
yeah.
know, just for having done the animation for just about almost every iconic animated character
yeah.
that you can think of.
It's
That's
surreal
incredible.
Because I told you, like, I have been obsessed with Ariel. When I was young, I looked up to Ariel, and I thought that she was me. And Glenn Kane, he created Ariel, so it was surreal to me.
Yeah.
And then one time he drew me and gifted to me a drawing of me.
Oh my!
And
gosh.
I was just like, you know, I froze.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds great. So we are excited to look for that. You were the first Asian composer or lyricist to win a Laurel Award. Does being an Asian woman inform your writing in any particular way? Do you feel that it has affected your journey in this industry?
I think me being an Asian doesn't really affect my music because I don't think about that when I'm writing. But I do think that as an Asian woman, I did feel, I mean, there were definitely obstacles, you know, in that journey to become a musical theater writer. I think as a woman, you know, this is a very male-dominant, you know, industry. So I think even just being a woman, I have felt that it's hard to really be taken seriously, especially when you are not experienced. So when I was just starting out, it was really hard for people to take me seriously. But I think what really helped me was just really focusing on the work. Even if nobody's really believing in me, I knew that if I have a convincing enough work that is actually good, then people will hear it and will wonder who wrote it, you know. And so I kind of focused on doing that. Now I think people have a little bit more respect to my work, but I think it's still on my mind that I need to really put great work out there so that, you know, me being an Asian or me being a woman is not going to be distracting my journey.
Right. Yeah. That makes so much sense. So you have a show coming up at Fine Science 54 Below on January 29th, and we know you have a lot of amazing, crazy special guests joining you. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what we can expect from your show, and what, or have you thought about what you're performing and kind of what you're presenting that night?
It's going to be a mix of a lot of, you know, K-pop songs, some of them that are cut.
Oh, wow.
and some of them that are still there in our show. And there's going to be some songs from other projects that I've done over the years. It'll be interesting, and it'll be really exciting because all of the songs in K-pop, except for one, is electronic. And in this concert, we're going to have a live band play them. And so some of them are still going to be electronic tracks, but some of them are going to be with this live band and with a different arrangement. So it's going to be a totally different experience. And it's going to be very satisfying, I think, to see a different side of these songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be wildly entertaining, hopefully.
Great. Yeah. And you have terrific guests.
Yeah, the guests are amazing. I have a lot of the performers that were with me in the K-pop journey. John Yee, Jason Tam, this amazing singer named Torin Nakamura, and Julia Bueva. Joining us are some of my great friends, Remy Zakin and Robbie Hager, that mm-hmm. I've been friends with them for a long time, and they're incredibly talented, so really don't want to miss.
Of course not.
Yeah, Ashley Park, of course, she's just an amazing performer. Jiho, the guy that I was talking about, Jiho.
My goodness. Has he gone back to his career, or has he decided he's going to make a go of this?
Yeah, he's committed. He's fully committed to this path, and he's doing such a great job. There is this one song that the solo artist sings, and that's the female solo artist sings, and I am going to lower the keys down a little bit for Jiho Kang to sing it, to make it a male version. It's going to sound so good.
Yeah, it sounds so great. Well, K-pop fans, make sure you show up. It's going to be so much fun. I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming and joining us today. It's been wonderful having you, and we are so looking forward to your show at Fine Science 54 Below January 29th. So if you don't have your tickets, make sure you get them at 54below.com. And thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.